Hello, lovers and friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Romantically Lit podcast featuring two undercover hopeless romantics who kiki as they review different Black romance novels from across the diaspora. And today we have an extra special guest, and this is Christina Forrest, who is an acclaimed author who has written one of our favorite trilogies right now, which is The Green Sisters. But I know you've also written some YA as well, so I'd have that on my radar. I have it on my Goodreads. I'm going to get to that. But yeah, so thank you so much for joining us today. And yeah, let's just jump into some of the questions we have for you. Adil, if you want to take it away.
Okay. All right. To start, what inspired you to create the Green Sisters and I guess their universe? And did you always envision the series being, or the stories being a series when you started writing? And I guess now, just because you confirmed, was it having them be from New Jersey, like you're from New Jersey, was that important to you as well?
So I knew going into it that if I wanted it to be a trilogy, I wanted each book to be about a different sister. And that comes, that's just something that's done largely in romance across different subgenres of romance. And so I was inspired by seeing that particularly in historical, because that was my entry, that was my gateway into reading romance. And I loved the interconnected standalone worlds and how, you know, one book would be about one sibling, another book would be about a different sibling, or like each book is about a different friend. And so that is what I wanted to do. I knew going into it that that was the kind of world that I wanted to set up. Honestly, I can't remember what I was thinking about when I decided to base it in this area. It started with the neighbor favor because Lily lives and works in New York City. And at the time, I lived and worked in New York City in publishing. And so a lot of her career and things like that were based on just my everyday life. Mm-hmm. And being from New Jersey, my husband's family is also from New Jersey. So I'm very familiar with that NJ transit ride from Penn Station out to the New Jersey suburbs. And so when I was thinking about like, well, where's her family from, New Jersey just seemed like the right option. And honestly, all of my books are based at, even if the main plot is taking place maybe in New York City or somewhere else, like there's always some aspect of New Jersey in my books. And I'm from New Jersey. I'm proud to be from New Jersey. And so not enough literature about New Jersey, I guess. And so I've always just like taking inspiration from my childhood and, you know, different things like that. Yeah, I think that kind of, there was like a three part question. Yeah, I think I got everything.
Yeah, you did. And you kind of answered my next question actually, which was like, what, like why you chose to start with Lily? I guess because you already like writing that kind of story, then was there a choice of, okay, should I then go with like Violet or Iris, or did you just want to go backwards up?
I actually started with Violet first.
Really?
I tried to write a marriage of convenience story about her and Xavier, but they were very different. And the whole story was different. The characters were kind of different. And it just wasn't clicking. It wasn't working right. But I was always very intrigued by Lily and Nick's story. It was a little different in how I had originally conceptualized it, but it always had the mistaken identity, epistolary email writing aspect to it. And I think that I was looking forward to writing Lily specifically because she's somebody who is quiet and bookish and, you know, needs to, you know, gain her confidence. And I like reading characters like that. And so I was looking forward to writing her character. And so I then went to write Lily's book. And then after I finished with her, it just made sense to go from youngest to oldest, as opposed to starting in the middle and then trying to figure it out otherwise. But yeah, I did actually try to start with Violet first, and it didn't work.
Okay. And speaking of marriage of convenience, that is, of course, like the romantic arc in the partner plot. So when it came to deciding what kind of romantic trope or romantic arc best fits each of the sisters, how was that navigation for you? Of course, like I'm biased. I love Lily's romantic arc. I think it's amazing. It reminded me of You've Got Mail to some degree. So when it came to like deciding what romantic tropes you wanted for each of the sisters, like how was the journey to getting there?
The only trope that I thought about ahead of time was marriage of convenience for the partner plot. And that's because, I mean, this is like kind of a bit of a spoiler if you haven't read The Neighbor Favor, but Violet is engaged, and at the end of The Neighbor Favor, she is not engaged. And so I knew going into her book that I wanted her to actually fall in love and get married to. I wanted her to have that chance that, ended up not happening in The Neighbor Favor. But otherwise, like with The Neighbor, and I guess like the letter writing was intentional. But otherwise, I just kind of do a lot of character work before I start writing a book. And then I let the characters tell me what's best, or like I let that inform the overall story. I don't intentionally write. I don't start with a trope, except the partner plot is the only one that I started the trope with. And then, like, of course, there are some tropes where it's just like with The Neighbor Favor, they're right emailing each other. But I did that because these are two people who are very lonely and deeply introverted, and they would have a hard time trying to talk to people and fall in love in person. So they had to fall in love through the written word first. And so that's why it was epistolary. And then, of course, with the love lyric, there's no way to get around the celebrity romance because Angel's famous. But it's really about people who are very different. And, Iris having this specific idea of the partner she thought she wanted, but actually it's somebody who is very different from what you thought you wanted on paper, but he is exactly the kind of person that you need. And he just happens to be a celebrity. And so the partner plot was the only one where I was like, marriage of convenience, I want to write that. Otherwise, it just sort of becomes a part of the story based on the characters.
I love the letters, by the way, or the emails. Like, first of all, I think when we read it and we reviewed it, we were like, nobody really writes like pen pal emails anymore. Like, it's kind of like a dying art, almost like love letters in itself. So it was refreshing to read. And then I was like giddy. I was like, oh, they're so in love, even though they don't know each other, they've never met. But like, I don't know how you even came up with that premise of like him being an author. I guess because you were in publishing, but like, the idea that his book only like a few people had read it, and then somehow the one person who read it and really loved it reached out to him, and like they clicked. It was very unique. Like I've yet to read something like it. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm honestly sometimes you'll have to forgive me because I wrote The Neighbor Favor in 2021. And I've written like what feels like a billion books since then. So sometimes when I'm like thinking about inspiration, I'm like, I have no idea what I was thinking when I came up with certain things. So I'm always like glad to hear that it's resonated with people because I at the time I'm sure that's what I was hoping, but now I'm like, that's great. I don't know what I was thinking about when I was working on it. Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay, so then to that regard, like, how do you approach writing chemistry and intimacy in the way that feels organic for each character, especially because you talk about doing a lot of character building before you actually put pen to paper? And it feels organic, and how do you deal, like, also writing characters when they're dealing with, like, pretty big emotional baggage or fears surrounding their vulnerability in romance?
Well, I guess with the chemistry, it's based on personality. I usually end up starting with the female main character and what her personality is like, and sort of crafting the guy as like a puzzle piece to fit her. And what I think that what I think she needs to go from being, there's a craft book that I use when I'm writing. It's called Romancing the Beat. And a phrase that is used throughout the book is how the character goes from being wholehearted. It's like whole in your heart to being wholehearted. So like, what is that character or what are they giving to each other to go from point A to point B? And so when I'm thinking about chemistry, that's what I'm thinking about. Like, how do these two relate to each other? And a lot of that comes across through dialogue. What are their conversations like? Is like, so for example, with the love lyric, Iris is like a little bit more reserved and she's so busy. She doesn't often have a lot of time for fun. And Angel is someone who wears his heart on his sleeve. And he, even though has had a bit of a struggle throughout his life because of family issues, he's sort of like a person who is determined to be happy. And he brings that to her while she also brings a sort of like level-headedness to him. And so when I'm thinking about chemistry, I'm not even necessarily initially thinking about sexual chemistry. It's really just about, what do these two people sound like when they're having a conversation? Mm-hmm. And how do they keep digging deeper and deeper under those layers in order to get to that point where they are falling in love with each other? And then when it comes to those moments of intimacy, or whether it be physical or emotional, with physical chemistry, it really, again, depends on their personality. So for like, I'm like, who are these characters? Lily and Nick. With Lily and Nick, this is their first time ever having sex, right? Like, they had this whole email exchange over a year, and then, you know, by the time they're in person and they're at the point of being physically intimate, it's only been like a month. But they have a little bit of history, but they're still very new to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So though writing those intimate scenes between them, it's more exploratory. They're learning each other because they're still very new. Whereas like Violet and Xavier, this is their first love. They like lost their virginities to each other. And so it's like a lot more, of course, when they get back together, it's a lot more passionate, and they also know each other in a lot of deep ways. So the sex that they have is going to be different because they have that history already. And then in the love lyric, Iris has not had sex in like 5 years.
Yeah.
And Angel is a very attractive sex symbol. Like, so what she needs is for him to like, sort of for him to take control and, you know, for her to be, and you know, I think I personally wanted her to be able to have like an enjoyable experience with this very attractive, you know, he's like a sex symbol and he wants to bring that pleasure to her because he cares about her so much. So yeah, it really does. It just depends on the characters and how they relate to each other and their different personalities.
Yeah. And I love that you gave every character the service, because even when you're talking about the whole dialogue, I feel like you created enough buildup for when that physical aspect came in, it made sense. And so even you like just doing the rundown right now, I'm just like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. This is how these characters would behave in all of these situations. So, I mean, testament to your writing. I think that is fantastic. I think one of the themes that I really like that threads all the books together is the whole idea about expectations. So for instance, like Iris, the expectation, she's a firstborn, so there's a lot on weight on her shoulders. And even when you think about the partner plot, I would even say like Xavier, for instance, like he has a lot of expectations on his performance because he was supposed to be the star, you know, basketball player. Unfortunately, because of his injury, it sort of made him feel a little bit insecure about what he's capable of. And of course, with Lily, wanted to be in publishing, but her mom is constantly taking her to these conventions, which I think was crazy, to do something outside of publishing. So how did you want to explore these tensions, especially like with their parents? So how do you want to explore the tension between who they were and who they were expected to be? Like, how did you do that balance to make sure that it serves their character at the end?
So I think that the difference in how I approach my adult books versus my YA. So like with my YA books, my characters tend to be like 17, 18. They're in their senior year of high school. And they are on the brink of achieving or taking the steps to achieve whatever big dreams that they have. Whereas the characters I write about as adult, they're, you know, late 20s, early 30s. And I feel like that is, and so I'm someone who's in my early 30s, and I started writing The Neighbor Favor. Was I 27? I can't remember. It was 27 or 28 that I started writing The Neighbor Favor. And I think that that's a time where you, okay, it's almost what, like 5 or so plus years post-graduation, and or 5 to 10 years post-graduation from college, and you're kind of looking around at your life and you're like, okay, this is what I thought that I wanted for myself. Did I get that? If I didn't get it, what would I change now? And I think that it's a, I think that that's a time for perspective. And that's what each of my characters are at a different stage of perspective. And I think that the partner plot is probably the best example of that, because Violet had this really, Violet and Xavier both had really big goals. She achieved her goals. And even though she's achieved them, she's really tired. She's like very creative or like, you know, burnt out professionally, even though she's doing really well and she loves her job. Whereas like Xavier did not succeed in those goals that he thought that he would get. And he, it's, he's so disappointed in himself that he cannot even see the merit and good in what he's doing with the current job that he has. And the two of them being in this forced proximity situation in his apartment is causing them to not only look at each other, but to look at themselves mm-hmm. and their lives and where they thought that they would be. I guess, you know, Iris sort of goes through that too, because she had really big dreams about the life that she thought she was going to have. And it turned out to be very different. But it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about myself and like I was somebody who had very specific goals and I worked to achieve them. And I love my job. I love what I do. I wouldn't be a writer if I didn't love it, because it's really hard. And you can still be really creatively burnt out. And then, you know, some of my friends who are in the middle of career changes, you know, you go to grad school for one area of study and then you get out in the work field, you're like, actually, I don't like this. And so I just think that I try to speak to the reality of, you know, people changing their minds and how that is happening at the same time as, you know, you wanting to fall in love or, you know, all the other things that happen when you're in your late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, it definitely felt a little bit of all their different expectations. And definitely like from the parental side as well, the mom, I think that one also kind of, it kind of hits home. So I love the fact that you were able to successfully incorporate that into their stories. Cause I think it's, it allows the reader to also be more introspective with their own lives as well. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Similarly, I think, you know, I feel like we talked a lot about Lily, but that's cause we really like her story, but like, at 20, being 27 and then reading her 27-year-old dream, I was like, when did Christina Forrest, when did she spy on me and put me in the book? Yeah. Like, this is really crazy career-wise. So again, like Hannah said, it was beyond relatable in that part. But also it made me think, like, I mean, you mentioned that with Lily, you were kind of in that space, in that publishing space, but all of their jobs are quite interesting and quite unique. Like, what is the process of you picking? I find, like, with romance writers, you guys give each other or give your characters very interesting jobs anyways, but like, what is the research that goes into picking those kind of careers? And like, how do you decide, okay, well, she is going to work for a huge makeup brand. Like, how do you go about that?
So with Lily was the only one who I intentionally made her work in publishing. In The Neighbor Favor, I just wanted it to sound like, because, you know, Lily's whole thing is I have these really fabulous, smart, accomplished, cool older sisters. And, you know, a big issue for her is that she does not feel like she matches with them in terms mm-hmm. of their accomplishments. And I was like, they need some really cool jobs. And so I was like, and I knew going into it that Violet was going to be like the unapologetic, like dazzling sort of sister who had like the bigger personality of the three, yep. and that Iris would be the more serious one. You know, I think that comes with being the oldest, the most responsible. And so I think probably subconsciously I was thinking, okay, like what jobs would be best for each sister? But I was just writing and I was like, you know, Violet's a stylist. She's like very beautiful, very pretty, and she dresses really nice. And then Iris is like this, you know, very high up corporate America baddie who works at a makeup company. And I just like put that in there. And then of course I had to stick to it for their books because I said it in the first one. So that's kind of where that came from.
Right. And then when we're looking at the male leads for each of the books, they're all very different. I won't tell you who my favorite is, but, you know, they all have like different characteristics that I do enjoy. So when it came to writing the male leads for the books, what type of representation did you want them to bring out for the women in the books, as well as like for readers who are interacting with these characters?
So that's a good question. I guess with Nick, so I guess I'll just go one by one. With Nick, I wanted to sort of touch on, I guess, mental health
right.
representation, and how we sometimes can carry trauma for a long time without addressing it. And especially I think in the Black community, seeking help for mental health and therapy is not always encouraged by older generations. And I thought it was really important to write about a Black man who is successful. He is, but he's afraid of his own success. Yeah. You know, like he has a lot of things that he needs to unpack. And I wanted to write about a young Black man who was vulnerable and who was, I always think of him as being like the emo one. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was important, you know, to write about somebody like that. But also going back to matching personalities, the thing that connects him and Lily is that they are so lonely, mm-hmm. you know, like emotionally, very lonely. Like Lily, of course, has her family who loves her, but she feels lonely inside. And like who's going to fall in love over email? You have to be, you know what I mean? You have to be in a certain kind of mindset to
now,
do something.
Hold on. Like that. I don't know, though. We live in the age of Tinder and Hinge and sliding
yes,
into DMs.
They haven't seen each other.
People
on Tinder, DM.
I don't know if you
without seeing pictures of each other.
I don't know. Maybe the Tumblr era was very unique to me, but people were falling in love on that and they didn't even see their real selves until
at 26 and 27 or like teenagers.
Teenagers, I guess, but I mean, but okay, but Hannah just mentioned You Got Mail was written in like what, 1980 something, so people have been falling in love.
Yeah, right, but like in today's day and age, there are like certain things you're like, okay, I want to know that you're a real person. I want to see what's your Instagram, like what's your social media. There are so many other ways to find out if someone is legit. You've Got Mail, of course, is like dial up AOL. Like there's so many ways today. At least this is my opinion. There's so many ways today to find out if somebody is real, what they look like. And I would think that you would ask those questions before getting too emotionally deep with someone.
I think
but Lily and
No,
because go ahead. No, go ahead. This is interesting.
I know because I'm thinking about it, and I feel like with Lily and Nick, because we meet Nick and he's not Nick, he's N.R. Strickland, right? So it's almost like, let's say I was emailing you, I'm going to assume Christina Forrest is talking to me, or maybe at least Christina Forrest's publicist. But if you've now told me, okay, it's you, I have no reason to believe that you're, like, lying. Because you're an author, you're published, like, somebody has to know you're real to a certain extent. And now, and I, if I remember correctly, Lily goes ahead and shares a couple pictures. She shares her cat, she shares her feet. I think at one point she does eventually share her face. So she's thinking, well, now you know I'm real. And because of who you are in society, what your job is, I'm assuming you're real. So, like, it, not that she shouldn't have done her due diligence, but because she's assuming that he's real based on his career, she, it's almost like he, like, is able to bypass all the checks that you would normally do, because you're thinking, why would N.R. Strickland lie to me? And he was honest in the beginning and said, like, actually, N.R. Strickland is not, like, my official name. That's, like, my pseudonym. Like, I don't know, like, that is why I'm thinking that she was like, yeah, I guess I could fall in love with this guy who I'm bonding over his work with, like, you know, kind of thing. And then he agreed to FaceTime, too, and then chickened out, but that's just me.
I mean, right. I mean, that's also at the end, the very end. I think my point being, though, that they had to, they, in order for them to have this connection with each other, it's because they're not having that connection with anyone in their real lives. Too. So that's, like, really the point that I'm trying to make. Like, they are emotionally lonely people. And so that is why they connect the way that they do, or at least that's, you know, what I was thinking when I was working on it. And so I think that's what's interesting about books, is that you'll have one intention, but, you know, it's interpreted differently. I think, well, you know, that's just, like, the beauty of art. But in my head, when I was writing it, I'm like, these are people who aren't getting those connections in their real lives, and so that's why this connection that they have over email is so enduring. I don't even remember what the question was.
I'm sorry.
we were just going to do a rundown of how you decided to pick these type of male leads for each of the women in the book. So you went through Nick's you know, like, so them coming from that, mental health.
And with Xavier, I don't know if there was anything in that I was trying to, like, represent. I think that I just was trying to write a character who I felt matched Violet's energy, and somebody who, at least when they were younger, was, like, on the same page as her, and he's still really supportive of her when they're adults. And I wanted to write about a teacher. Like a male teacher, I think that a lot of the now that there's Abbott Elementary, it's nice. Yeah. But I just wanted to write about somebody who was in the teaching field. And with Angel, again, I mean, it was already mentioned in the first book. So it was kind of like, that's the thing about series. You say one thing about somebody, and then when it's time to write them, you're like, okay, well, that's who they're going to be. I think I wanted to write about the balance of religion and being, like, in today's day and age for young people. And because I think a lot of R&B singers, or singers in general, get their start in church. And a lot of us, you know, have to go to church as kids. And, you know, as you get older, you get your own relationship with religion or faith. And I guess I wanted to write about that. It wasn't super intentional, though. It just became a part of his story. That's the thing about writing. It's just kind of like you have a nugget of something going into it, and then by the end of the book, it becomes something else. So that was just something that I kind of, like, explored with him.
Okay. And I know it's a very difficult question to answer, but amongst all the books, or I guess, like, the women in the books, is there one particular sister that you related to the most, or who you'd say is your favorite?
I don't have a favorite. I love them all equally. I would say personality wise, I am the most like Iris.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't have a favorite.
Yeah.
I have a question we didn't write, but I have a question. Is Caramel Kitty based off of Meg Thee Stallion?
Yes. She is.
And then the two's Angel.
Oh, wait, is he a... What girl?
Who is he?
Like, who was your inspo for Angel?
I didn't have one specific inspiration for Angel. He's just... Yeah.
And how about the two girls that the manager was managing? What was
I was thinking about Chloe and Hallie.
I was like, this is so familiar. Okay, cool.
What about the one that Violet's ex fiance cheats on her with?
She wasn't based on anyone. I just sort of made her up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. And then I guess that leads to some questions, some other questions we have for you. So when it came to writing, which authors or which books, poems did you draw your inspiration from to get some of, the juices flowing for these different characters?
I am not directly inspired by other books for my books. But in terms of music, I mean, for Angel, I was listening to a lot of Usher, even though he's not directly inspired. Like, in terms of Angel's career trajectory is inspired by Usher's career trajectory, but like that's like the only thing. For Violet, I don't know if you guys know June Ambrose. She's a celebrity stylist. She's a Black celebrity stylist. I think she used to be a stylist for Jay-Z, but like, and I don't know if you know who Rachel Zoe is either. She used to have this reality show called Styling with Rachel Zoe. It was something like that. When I was younger, I watched this reality show where she was a celebrity stylist and she had this like cool, fabulous life. And so I like did a lot of research on her and also on June Ambrose. I looked at a lot of pictures of June Ambrose like in her closet when I was, crafting different things for Violet. Lillian, Nick, I guess it's just in terms of his career. A song that actually reminds me of Neighbor Favorite is You Don't Know My Name by Alicia Keys. I listen to that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's funny? I love Nora Ephron's movies, but like When Harry Met Sally, that's one of my favorite movies of all time. But I had never actually seen You've Got Mail. I knew what it was about, but I watched it. And so when it was getting all those comparisons, I was like, oh, well, it's probably because of the emails and like New York City. Yeah. But I actually watched it on a plane, like maybe 2 or 3 months after The Neighbor Favorite came out. And I was like, oh, I can see why people keep comparing. However, I would not have Lily date a man who gets her bookstore closed.
No.
So...
Yeah.
I was like, this kind of storyline would not be able to fly today, but I can see the comparisons. But otherwise, I don't. You know what? For the partner plot, I realized that a movie that had inspired it, but this is something I realized later. Do you remember that movie, What Happens in Vegas, with Ashton Kutcher and Cameron Diaz? It came out in like 2003, maybe.
Yeah.
I watched that a lot because this is when HBO was on regular cable and you didn't have to pay for it. And I had a TV in my room with regular cable. And so I would watch whatever movies came on HBO. And that came on a lot. And I would watch it whenever it was on. And I think it just sort of like planted a scene in the back of my head. So then however many years later, when I was working on the book, some of those scenes from when they're in Vegas and they're partying, then they wake up and they're married. They're like, oh, so I think that inspired it too.
Now that you're saying it, it reminds me of that Katy Perry song. I think it's literally called What Happens in Vegas.
Oh,
and
the video is like, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Okay. So then I guess back to the previous question, not who's your favorite sister, but who did you find your favorite to write for?
Violet.
Violet? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had the most fun writing Violet. I think she's just like, the hardest sister to write was Iris because she's repressed. And I don't I didn't even say that to be funny, but like on a serious note, it's hard to write about characters who think and feel one thing but say something else. That's like walking a tightrope. And so all pieces of dialogue, like literally everything, I'm looking at with a very fine tooth comb because she's thinking something, but she's saying something completely different because she's very protective of her heart. And Violet says whatever is on her mind. So it's just like so much. It was like, and then especially going from Lily, who is somebody who is working herself up to confidence and speaking her mind and standing like in her own power. Someone who's a little bit more shy, even though I love her sweetness and I loved writing her, like, especially like when she's at work and she's like, oh my God, my boss is so crazy. Like, I loved writing those scenes where you can tell she's just sitting there like, what the fuck is going on, you know? But like Violet, she would just be like, what the fuck is going on? You know, she would just say it. And so like writing her felt very liberating. Mm-hmm. I think of all the three sisters, I had the most fun with her just because she's just like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, she says what's on her mind, which is great. And needed for her career as well when things are fast-paced and decisions need to be made as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
When you were writing from your own perspective, did it shape how you look at love and relationships? Mm. Like, did it shape you, or did you add your own like tidbits about it into the books?
So that's a good question. I would say with the neighbor favor, I was shaping it based on my own thoughts and views. Yeah. With the partner plot, it shaped me.
Mm-hmm.
And with the love lyric, I still don't know. I still don't know if I have enough perspective on certain things about the love lyric. I will say that... Did you ask me if I had a favorite book or a favorite sister?
Sister.
Yeah.
So of all three, I mean, I love all of them so much. And I do love all of them equally. But I will say that the love lyric feels really special to me as a story because of Iris's backstory and Angel. And I just, that was the of the three books that when I finish, you know, you're going through the editing process, you have to read the book like a billion times to the point where you're like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of these characters. I'll never want to read this book again. But that's how I know it's ready to go off into the world. But the love lyric, when I finished reading that for the last time, I remember feeling like, I think this is really special. And just for me as an author, like I felt really, really proud of the story and the characters in a way that I always get with every book. I take it up until I can, you know, like I work as hard on it as I possibly can. And I don't let go of it until I feel like it's the best that it can possibly be with whatever skills that I have at that point in my career. But with the love lyric, I did feel like this book feels really special to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what you asked me.
Answer the question. Don't worry about it. You answered it.
Did you have any like surprising feedback you received from readers on any of the books?
I was not expecting people to be so shocked by how the emails ended.
Now that you said it, yeah.
And like maybe it's because I knew it was coming, but like I have read books like that in historical. They're writing letters, though, like physical letters. And all of a sudden, the letters just stop. And it's like, oh, my gosh, what happened? And I always was intrigued. So funny. Like I'm saying about art is that, like, you write it with, like, one intention. But, like, yeah, some people had, like, very strong reactions to that, which is, it's funny to me. It's totally okay, like, how people respond to it. It's fine. But that is not...
She's dying. We were upset.
Like, there's a reader out there who's like, no, like, you actually ruined my day.
I know. They're probably like, forget this girl. Yeah. It's not, I'm not laughing at upsetting people because I'm laughing because that's not what I intended. So it's like, I did not intend that at all. So it's almost like, I see, like, for example, with the love lyric. I knew that there would probably be scenes that would be a little bit not upsetting, but that would make people sad. Like, yeah. I knew that going into it, but that's just because of, you know, she lost her husband. And, like, even some of the scenes that I was writing, I was like, oh my gosh, this feels so sad. I did not think that when I was writing The Neighbor Favor. And so that's why I was like, oh. But then I was like, this is good.
Yeah.
Art getting a reaction. Like, this is amazing, you know? But, like, now, 2 years later, I'm like, oh, man. Sorry, guys.
We forgive you. You know, as long as it was happy ending, we don't mind.
I mean, I think that's why I was kind of like, no, like, this is a romance. There's going to be a happy ending. And also, like, I was very intentional with Nick having a legitimate reason for why he would do that. Mm-hmm. And so, because I knew all of the different trauma and different things that he was dealing with, I knew why he was doing what he was doing. But then, you know, as a reader, you don't know.
And you kind of dragged it a little. So. You dragged it a little bit. I can't lie. Like, there were several moments I was like, dude, just tell her now. Like, if you tell her today, it'll hurt less tomorrow.
But then there wouldn't be a story.
Yeah, but I was like, dude, just do it today. Like, can you do it right now? Like, you're walking around New York City pretending to find her this guy that doesn't exist. Oh, he does exist. It's you. Like, please, you're hurting her. You're hurting me. You're hurting yourself.
Pretending to find
pretending to find this wedding date. But you are the perfect wedding date.
Yeah. Well, he didn't think he is her perfect wedding date, though. Like, that's his thing. Like, he.
But it was like, it felt, I guess, in reading it, you're like, yeah, this is amazing. Like, this is a great story. And, like, of course, it's a romance, so they're going to get over it. But also, you're like, this is so devious. Like, you know exactly who she is, and she's telling you, yeah, this is my cat. You know this cat. You know those feet. Like, it's just like, the playing field was not even. So you're just like, dude, do it right now. Like, just come on. Let's get with it. But, yeah, I don't know. But it turned out great, though. But I get where whoever was surprised got it from. Because me, too. Even though I knew it was going there, I was like, oh, he didn't show up. Like, maybe his Zoom subscription expired or something. Like, I don't know. But it turned out well, like you said. And now we can look back and laugh. What did you learn anything about yourself as you're a writer or even as a woman in the since from like The Neighbor Favor to The Love Lyric? Is there anything you learned about yourself?
No. No, not like me as a person. I think not through the writing, you know, the lessons I learn as time goes on come out through the books. Yeah. It's more like the other way around. I mean, I grow as a writer with each book, and you know, because you're constantly training that muscle. So, and just in terms of like the quick output, you know, a book a year or two books a year sometimes, and just like capabilities, things like that, and things I've learned professionally. But like on an emotional level, I don't know if it's more like I'm taking lessons I've learned and putting it into the book as opposed to like, oh, I'm realizing this while I'm writing it. It's like, I don't think that's how not how it works for me usually.
Okay. And if you weren't writing contemporary romance or even YA, is there another genre that you are willing to explore or maybe infuse romance into it?
There are definitely subgenres of romance that I mm-hmm. would like to write. I don't think I mean, never say never. I don't see myself not writing romance. I have like a couple different sci-fi ideas. Yeah, but I don't have time to write them. Like for the foreseeable future, it'll be contemporary. But yeah.
Okay. And do you have a writing process, a ritual, something you always go back to when you're trying to, you know, flesh out ideas or create ideas?
So I do have a pretty, well, now that I'm like contracted, which means that usually by the time I start writing a book, I've already pitched it to my publisher. I write like a synopsis for them to give the okay. And then from there, I brainstorm. It's usually just kind of like a free write in my journal. Mm-hmm. And then I use like a plot arc. I outline a lot and I do like a beat sheet. And then from there, I do an outline on a poster board and it's got sticky notes and all kinds of stuff. And then I follow that and some, you know, things change as I'm working and I use a pencil to erase stuff. But yeah, so that's, I just sort of like follow that same kind of like outline preparatory process. But in terms of rituals, honestly, it's just reminding myself while I'm working on the first draft that it doesn't need to be perfect. That's mm-hmm. hard. Because you can compare a first draft to like a finished book and they're completely different. But yeah, otherwise I don't think I have a ton of rituals, but I do try to follow like the same process just because I like to be as organized as possible to know that I can meet my deadlines.
Yeah. And any authors, I know it must be difficult to like writing, having the deadlines and then like wanting to read what, you know, your favorite authors in the space are doing as well. But is there mm-hmm. a few authors or a few books, maybe one or two, where you highly recommend or you've read and you just love? Specifically mm-hmm. in the Black romance contemporary. But if you have anything outside of that, we'll welcome it. But anything that's really like first thing in mind.
So I recently read a novel called August Lane by Regina Black, and that publishes in July. I want to say it might be July 28th or 29th. And that is a book about it's a Black romance about a Black country singer who is a one-hit wonder, and the song that he got famous off of was written by this girl who he was in love with in high school, and they have not spoken or seen each other in 10 years, and he is returning to their hometown for this sort of like festival. Her mother is a famous Black country singer, and he's going to perform with her mother. It is like honestly the best book that I've read all year. It is fantastic. Really? Okay. It's so good. She's so freaking talented. So that is the one book where I'm like, please, everybody read that in July. Another book that I really loved that came out recently is, I knew I was going to do this. Wait, let me look at my bookshelf. Because I almost want to say, it's My Ariel. It's not When I Think of You. It's
No Ordinary Love.
No Ordinary Love. Yes. See, because I kept thinking of When I Think of You, that's not it. And No Ordinary Love. And that is about a singer, sort of like a pop R&B singer who is going through a very nasty divorce with her ex-husband who's... Wait, did you guys both read this?
We're reading it right now. We're halfway through.
Oh, okay. Let me that's also a book that I really loved. And I read that at the end of last year. And so I highly recommend that as well.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite trope? Like, not to write, but like to read?
I love them all. Honestly, I will read anything. I even read the ones where people are like, I hate that one. Like,
pregnancy?
I know a lot of people.
Pregnancy?
I eat it every time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Age difference? The huge.
I'll read Age Difference. That's why I'm like, whenever I see. I know, like, you know, I think that you think you don't like something and then you read it well done one time and you're like, oh,
you might I'll have read to more. Recommend an Wait. Age gap one because we're so yeah. anti-age gap. It's crazy.
Let me think. Well, you know what? Let me think. I'm looking at my bookshelf. I don't know if I've read a ton of age gap. It's more like I'm open to it. Like oh. I'll read it and see if I like it. I think age gap is a little bit more predominant in historical, just because that's kind of how it was. But like looking at my bookshelf now, I'm not seeing a ton of age gap, but I'm also just kind of like, if they're both adults, like no weird stuff, they're yeah. both adults, then I'll try it. Because that's how I felt about Second Chance Romance. Like, I was like, spin the block? No, no way. But then you read a really good book and you're like, no. actually, yeah, sure. Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I felt about Secret Baby. Hide the Baby. What? That's crazy. But then you read a really good Secret Baby and you're like, you know what? Mm-mm. Sure. So that's how I feel. I feel like
she's like,
there, I don't like to yuck anybody's
hell yeah.
Like, if I read yeah. anything.
No, that's like, crazy.
So a really example that I bring up a lot of Secret Baby and Accidental Pregnancy First, then Secret Baby, is a book called Destiny's Surrender by Beverly Jenkins. And it's a historical romance and it's about a woman who. She's basically a prostitute back in the Old West, and one of her favorite clients, she accidentally gets pregnant by him, and then she gets into a dangerous situation with basically like the madam of the house where she works, and she goes to find the father of her son because he's rich, and she basically wants him to protect the baby, but then he's like, no, we're getting married. Marriage of Convenience, all three. So that's what I mean, where it's like, sometimes people are like, oh, I wouldn't read that. But I'm like, but have you read this? So, you know, and that's why I'm always just like, you think you might not like something, but then if you read it done well, it's kind of like, oh, I could read something else like that too.
And then, yeah. Do you have any plans for... any books in the future or returning to the YA space or maybe even another trilogy?
So I have a YA romance coming out later this year called Heartsick. And that's about two teens who discover a very bad secret about this pill that you can take overnight in order to cure your heartbreak. So it's a bit of like adventure, speculative, I guess a little bit romance. And that comes out in October. And the next adult romance thing, that is going to be sort of a new series, but I kind of really see that as two books, as a duology. And that will be the first book in that series is supposed to come out next summer.
Okay.
Okay. Lovely. I think we only have one more question for you. This is more personal because we're currently obsessed and we saw it on the weekend and you're from New Jersey and so is Michael B. Jordan. Have you seen Sinners?
Oh! You did see Sinners. It's really good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Any favorite parts?
So because I'm me, I love the two part, well, because with the two different Michaels. When they both are admitting that they still love the women in their lives, those were probably my favorite part. When he's just like, what it was, smoke's the more serious one, right?
Yeah.
When he's saying to her, like, wait, no, now I'm getting the conversations confused. But both of them basically have a similar conversation. It's like, what do you want me to say? Do you want me to say that I still love you? And blah, blah, blah. Of course I do. And it's like, yes, obviously, that's what she wants to hear. So those are my favorite parts. But the movie as a whole was so good. They're just so, I need to see it again because there's just so many layers. And, you know, my friends who also saw it are pointing out, did you see when this happened? I'm like, wait. I didn't even pick up on that. So, like, I need to go back and see it. So,
We did a crazy one. We, like, left the 70 millimeter like IMAX as the credits were rolling. We were like, do you want to go see it again? Like, yeah. And then we like immediately went to the regular showing. We're like, oh wow. But it was really, really good. I guess now I have one more other question. Like, mm-hmm. if you could turn any of these books into a film or a series, like, is that a dream for you? I don't know if that's a dream for every author, but like, do you have like a director that like you would be like, oh, I want this person to work on my book?
I think I see different people for different books. Like, I think Quinta Brunson could do a good job with The Neighbor Favor because of the quirk element to it. I believe her name is Tracy Oliver, who did the Harlem series.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
I don't think she directed, but she wrote and produced it. I could see her doing either the love lyric or the partner plot. And then later, of course, I'm like, why didn't I say this person? But yeah, I would love if anybody was interested. but I particularly think about Quinta just because I think that like her, like the humor.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that for The Neighbor Favor specifically, I think that. Mm-hmm.
Do you have actors you want to play the scissors?
I like Aaron Pierre for Xavier only because he's really tall and light-skinned.
I have never seen
him. Because that's sort of how I imagined Xavier to look. For the girls, you know, I think she's probably not young enough anymore, but Nicole Beharie, okay. I like her a lot for Iris.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Otherwise, oh, you know who else I like? The actress who's in How to Get Away with Murder and also, what else is she in? She's also in the Lessons in Chemistry. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The
She plays Michaela in How to Get Away with Murder. Is it Michaela? She's like Michaela, one of the students.
You know, here's the thing: I never watched How to Get Away with Murder, but I know she's she's on the show though. I've seen her in other stuff.
Did you watch Sylvie's Love? She's in Sylvie's Love.
Yes, I like her a lot. Okay. I could see her being any of them. Oh, I also think that Kiki Palmer is amazing. And I could see her as Violet. Just really? But also Kiki has a lot of range. So I could see her doing any of them. I feel like people have said to me for Lily, like Ayo Edebiri, because of like the quirky aspect to her. And I think that that also works. But when I'm writing, I'm not thinking about people. That's just later that I'm like, oh, I could see them doing that. But yeah.
We're definitely hoping that something great happens with one of the books at least, because there's so much content there and I can really see on the big screen. So crossing fingers, you know, for the fans.
I know. It'd be nice. Yeah.
If you need us to sign a petition, whatever, just call us. We'll post it. But yeah, I think that's all the questions we have for you today. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and speaking to us and talking in detail about all the characters, your process. We really respect you as an author, as a writer, and we just look forward for your book coming out in October and whatever else you have upcoming as well. So yeah, thank you so much. And for those who are listening, please check us out at Romantically Lit on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and then you can always email us at romanticlit@gmail.com. This is always the hardest part for me because I always forget. Anywho, and of course, like, check out Christina Forrest, Hawaii's The Green Sisters Trilogy, her upcoming book in October, and her other works. Follow her on all her socials. Fantastic writer. Honestly, like, one of the big voices in contemporary Black romance. So always look out for authors like you. But yeah, that's all we got for all of y'all today.
Thank you for having me.